This is work I've been doing here at UCSB with Lars Bildsten on theoretical modeling of the accreting primaries in cataclysmic variables. And what I'll talk about today is, well, I'll get to it at the end of my talk, after I talk about the theory a little bit, is what we predict for CV colors from our models. So there's a picture of a CV. The cool component is a Roche-Loeb filling main sequence or low mass main sequence star, and the white dwarf is a blue component, and the accretion disk is somewhere in between, usually hot in a high accretion rate system. But what I want to do is actually address low accretion rate systems, particularly dwarf novae, in which case when the disk instability has the disk in quiescence, there's very little light coming from the accretion disk. There is some, but I'm going to ignore it so that the quiescent light of the system is just the light of a hot white dwarf and the cool Roche-Loeb filling companion. Now, since the companion fills its Roche-Loeb, the evolution of the companion is actually tied to the binary evolution, which is the separation and the mass ratio in the binary. So what we would like to do for the white dwarf thermal component is do something similar. So let me first make sure or be clear about what I mean by an accretion rate. So we want to talk about the time average accretion rate. Reason for this is that the dwarf nova, the disk goes into outbursts, which lasts between days and weeks, and then recur every month to years, whereas the envelope thermal time is more like 1,000 years. So that if you're looking for the re-radiated emission from the underlying layers of the envelope, which I'll talk about in a minute, what you want to pay attention to is the mass transfer rate in the binary, or the average accretion rate over these dwarf novae outbursts. So I'll denote it with this M with the M dot with brackets on either side. So ideally we would like to predict the effective temperature of the white dwarf as a function of the mass of the white dwarf and the accretion rate in the binary. And this would tie the white dwarf evolution, in addition to the companion evolution, to the evolution of the binary. So let me give you a quick sketch of how the energetics work in the envelope of the white dwarf. So we have matter accreting onto a white dwarf, which has some accreted layer already on it, which is about 10 to the minus 4 solar masses. So it's fairly thin in mass compared to a 0.6 solar masses of carbon and oxygen. And this accreted layer, when you add a mass element to it, in order to hold up the additional mass, all the fluid elements here will exchange a bit of their gravitational potential energy for thermal energy. Well, the thermal energy is then available to be transferred around. Especially what we're talking about is transferred either out to be seen during quiescence as thermal emission from the surface of the white dwarf, or into the core to heat the core. So the way we calculate this is a quasi-static envelope where we can evaluate derivatives throughout the envelope and take some integrals and find the quantities. But to get a rough idea, what I can do is just compare the fluid element that would go on top to a fluid element that I would pull out the bottom. And this is fairly similar to integrating through the envelope. And so the amount of energy, or the energy deposition rate into the envelope, then, which can be re-radiated on a 1,000-year time scale, is just accretion rate times GH, where H, now I use the scale height of the envelope, which depends on the core temperature in a fairly straightforward way. And so that actually we find that the effective temperature should depend not only on the mass and the accretion rate in the binary, but also the size of this accreted layer due to the appearance of a mean molecular weight in this, which is different between the hydrogen, helium, and the carbon and carbon-oxygen layers, and the core temperature, which really sets the scale height of the envelope. So this is results from our actual integrations. So here I have T effective, or what I'd rather talk about is the luminosity, the surface luminosity coming out the surface of the white dwarf. So I'll talk about this for a little bit so you can get an idea of what the results of our models are. So the extent of these curves that I show for two different accretion rates, the lower of which is good for white dwarfs that are, or dwarf novae that are near the period minimum, for CV people who know what that means. The lower boundary of this curve is some small accumulated mass, say 10 to the minus 5. I've used a few by 10 to the minus 5 here. It's done. And then the upper edge is actually the maximum accumulated mass that you can have on the white dwarf before a classical nova goes off, but the thermonuclear instability sets in and turns it into a classical nova. Now, the limit is actually quite sensitive to the core temperature. So the actual maximum accumulated mass actually varies over this range. But what I want to point out is, so if you're familiar with, but I'll essentially treat the accumulated mass as an unknown. So I'll show bands essentially from here on. But it does increase up, so the surface luminosity increases with accumulated mass. Now, for people familiar with LTC relations or luminosity, core temperature relations of standard cooling white dwarfs, that's the dotted line, which what we found is, so for high core temperatures, it looks essentially just like a cooling white dwarf, whereas at low core temperatures, you're dominated by the thermal energy released in the atmosphere due to accretion. So what I'm gonna do, so now you would say, well, how are we gonna get rid of this core temperature if we want it to depend on the accretion rate? Well, our models also tell us the flux throughout the envelope, which is, this is the flux at the bottom of the envelope. So coming in from the star, as you can see, as you might expect at high core temperatures, it's just like a cooling white dwarf. So you have a cooling white dwarf with a little bit of energy being added on by the accretion. But at low core temperatures, here now, the accreted layer mass, with increasing accreted layer mass, this goes down because there's more energy being released in the envelope. And then this goes negative. This is a log scale, so you can't quite see it. But it goes negative and you start to heat the core. So what we can set the core temperature by enforcing equilibrium so that the core temperature is such that it'll be at a given accretion rate, on average, there's no energy coming out or going into the core. The way this sort of works mechanically is that early in when the accreted layer mass is thin, soon after a classical nova, so this is accumulated mass or time at a constant accretion rate, and this is the core luminosity, which I demonstrated in the previous plot as a function of time. So when the accreted layer mass is thin, this is positive. So in a temperature pressure, so this is going into the white dwarf this direction, we have a thermal gradient that's such that the core, the isothermal core which sits out here, is cooling, whereas for a medium accreted layer mass, there's very little energy coming out of the core. And then for layer mass just near, actually a range of accreted layer masses near classical nova, you actually reheat the core. So the average here is zero, which gives us the equilibrium value. So the core can reach this core temperature in a core thermal time, which is about 10 to the 8 years, which is longer than the binary evolution time. So thus by enforcing equilibrium, we've obtained what we set out to obtain, which is an effective temperature that's tied to the parameters of the binary evolution, the mass and the accretion rate. And this is just, you see effective temperature as a function of accretion rate for several different masses. And then we just leave the accreted layer mass at the time as a sort of unknown parameter. And we can use this to predict the broadband fluxes, since we have the T effective of the white dwarf, given a model for the binary evolution. So if I start with a 0.6 solar mass white dwarf in a cataclysmic variable with at a 2-hour orbital period with a 0.2 solar mass companion, and I say that the binary is evolving due to emission of gravitational waves, so that extracts angular momentum from the binary and causes accretion onto the white dwarf. And I assume that the mass accreted onto the white dwarf is ejected in classical Novi explosions. This gives me the accretion rate as a function of time, which I then map into the effective temperature as a function of time, where the time axis here is in gigayears. And you see it's a bit between 10 and 12 thousand Kelvin. So, and then I can map this into colors. The blue are the V magnitude for the companion, which is falling as its mass is decreasing, and the white dwarf, which is fairly constant with time, going down a little bit as the effective temperature decreases. And the same for the I magnitude. We see that what happens is the system colors that are just the superposition of the white dwarf and the companion switch it switches from a companion magnitude to a white dwarf magnitude, first in V and then in I at some later time. So we get this evolution, and the way this looks in a color magnitude diagram is that, so as I say, starting with a 0.2 solar mass star, it evolves essentially across the gap between the main sequence and the white dwarf sequence from a 0.2 solar mass looking like a 0.2 solar mass companion to looking like a 10,000 Kelvin or so white dwarf. So that's what we find for the evolution. So to clean it up a little bit, take that out, and we find that we happen to hit above where our evolution comes across, the white dwarf sequence is fairly clean, whereas below there are extra objects at different masses which might come out of the binary evolution, and so some possibly higher mass and some lower mass. So, and as Brad said, that's a possible explanation for the bump that's seen in his number density as a function of luminosity, or of I magnitude. So to conclude, we predict the white dwarf effective temperature in an accreting white dwarf in a CV, and this allows for additional observational constraints in the binary. Mainly, this is for comparison to the field. People study the thermal emission from the white dwarf in a quiescent CV directly. And also, what I've shown you is that it can reheat CV primaries so that they look like hotter isolated white dwarfs. And they actually will sit right at this point for a little while, because what you can't see, unfortunately, in this, I haven't marked age on here, is they actually reach the white dwarf sequence a little before. Well, I can go back. So they sit here for maybe a gigayear or so before they start to fall more quickly from the because when the binary reaches the period minimum, the accretion rate starts to drop. But before that point, it'll sit there for maybe a gigayear at fairly constant effective temperature. So that's all. Thank you.
So how much would your track shift as a function of the accreting white dwarf mass? I'm just wondering whether, can I extrapolate your line all the way through to the one apparently massive guy, which would...
It'll move actually up a little bit.
Okay.
From there.
Well, it could cool down, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a question maybe more for Brad, but for you, Dean, as well. To explain Brad's bump, you then can tell us how many CVs are... How many white dwarfs are locked up in CVs, right? Have you tried to work through the numbers?
No, I haven't cranked through the numbers. I mean, I just...
Have you, Brad, or have you guys?
No.
This gives, in effect, the number of white dwarfs locked up in CVs. The normalization of this bump.
Well,
it would require knowing how long the CV size reached their historical curve of what? 4 gigahertz.
4 gigahertz. Yeah. So, I mean, we'd have to know something, have to presume something about the white dwarfs coming down the cooling track, probably. And
the problem with the explanation...
I guess the problem with explaining the bump in the luminosity function with this would be the distribution along the curve, right? Because there's nothing in between the main sequence and the white dwarf sequence. So unless they spend nearly all their time near the end part, it would have to require a very special epoch.
Yeah. So there's an open question as to why there aren't any in between if there are some built up here, which so they would pile up. So they spend, it takes several gigayears to, but it so it takes several gigayears to evolve across, and they spend about a gigayear at the end. So you might expect that there should be some in between, but that depends on details of the binary evolution.
What happens to the accretion disk?
So I've just left the accretion disk out.
Right, but what happens if you include it? Where would it be?
That depends on your favorite accretion disk model.
Right, but isn't that something you need to include?
So if you wanted to know the colors of a particular system, you would need to include it. But what I'm trying to find is the colors in quiescence. So when the accretion disk is dim, So a dwarf nova has two states for the disk, an active state where there's actually material moving through the disk, releasing energy in the disk, so the disk is bright, and a quiescent state where there's a fairly low rate of material moving through the disk. It's being transferred from the companion to the disk and then staying there.
Even this diagram wouldn't have much of an effect. That's usually only you. If you look at Josh's data, right, CVs, they're on the main sequence in this diagram.
They're brighter relatively in quiescence and X-rays, right?
This is. The mean M dot Mars is just telling me is the instantaneous M dot between a type of 10^13.
Okay, so
that's average.
So there's the phenomenology of what's the point.
The time average mass accretion rate for those of 10^-11.
Yes.
Okay.
About.
Sorry.
Actually, to reach that value will take you more than the Hubble time. It's hard to get there.
We can show you the work.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. But the question that's coming up is what's the expected X-ray luminosity of those?
Or what is the instantaneous M dot in between
outbursts? Right. So the
instantaneous M dot between outbursts is up to the observers to tell us what that number is. No way there is going to be that number. So, in X-rays, it's typically 10^-2 of the time average.
Right.
That's the phenomenology. So 10^-13 solar masses per year. You have to put in your urge for
So the question is, if you take something like WG Cetti in quiescence at the distance of the cluster, do you see its X-ray luminosity?
Yeah.
And that's actually, so there's some debate about whether WZ Sujeti is magnetic, so that.
You make the outburst.
Thank you.